I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Amy Marks Kors, Chris Ranji, 104.1 FM KMOX. It is the third hour of our show. Don't forget the Gas House Gang happens at 12 o'clock today. We'll talk some Redbirds baseball with you. But right now, we go to the guest line and we talk to a regular contributor for us with us every Monday, political commentator. He is the author of the daily newsletter, So What?, an independent news creator on Substack, YouTube, and Newsphere, also contributes to News Nation. Chris Saliza is with us on KMOX. Good to talk to you, Chris.
You know, they say that your third hour guests are always your best guests. That's a very common thing in radio. So I'm flattered to be leading off the third hour.
We go to the best because we're losing steam.
We need someone to pump things up.
Yeah. So we need a little help.
That's right.
So thank you for the help.
Well, I am here.
All right. Well, Chris, being completely honest, you probably heard about the storms that hit St. Louis.
Yes.
And it's been so overwhelming. The devastation is hard to grasp. An EF3 that tore through a city. Our North City area, the Central West End,
yes.
and then
Central
stretching west.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so that has been really all of our focus, I think, people in St. Louis. And it's crazy how something like this turns your way away from, like, the cable news and the national news, and you're focused on local. And so I guess the world has been chugging along while we're busy here in St.
Yes.
Louis. And so with the president of the United States, we heard the former president, Joe Biden, was diagnosed with a very aggressive form of prostate cancer. And just kind of wrapping my head around that, what do we know about how ill he is and when, I guess, did they know he was sick before this? Is this news to them?
Yeah, well, let me first say, I think for people who have not heard me on before, my wife is a St. Louis native, and many of her friends, and went to high school and everything in St. Louis, and many of her friends still live in the area, and we've gotten a ton of pictures and video, and it is terrifying. So I know there was a loss of life, and it is certainly on the mind of the Saliza household because of our personal connection to St. Louis. So I hope the cleanup and the recovery, I know none of this stuff happens as fast as you want, and certainly for the families who were affected, it's going to be a much longer grieving process. But you are on our minds, I can assure you that. As it comes to Biden, so here's what I did this morning. I am not a medical doctor, right? I am a political reporter, which is not I never feel comfortable answering questions about medical things. I can talk about the politics of something like it, but what I did is my roommate in college went on to become a urologist. And so he deals with this sort of stuff all the time. I actually did on my newsletter, my Substack newsletter, I interviewed him. It's up there now. It's free if people want to see it. I would urge you to watch it. It's a video. You can look at the transcript. I would urge it because there's just a lot of facts in there. And the two that I took the most from, he made two points. Point one, he said it would be very unlikely, not impossible, but very unlikely that a PSA test, which is the blood test usually given, to people of a certain age, to men of a certain age, to detect the possibility of prostate cancer. It's very unlikely that a PSA test done in Joe Biden's annual physical in 2024 when he was president would not have detected this cancer. That was point one. Point two, and this I didn't know at all, he said that the treatment typically is they do a suppression of testosterone because testosterone levels are known to fuel prostate cancer. He said one of the unfortunate side effects of that treatment in most patients is a decline in cognitive function, feeling foggier, struggling to sort of remember things. And that obviously plays into the conversation that has already been going on about Joe Biden with this book, Original Sin, set to come out tomorrow, about, how debilitated was he during the presidency, both physically and mentally? Who knew about it? When did they know? What? Why didn't they say? So those are my two big takeaways. And again, this is not from Crystal as a political reporter. This is from a friend of mine from college who is a urologist who I thought that conversation was very worthwhile for people who are looking for facts about how this got diagnosed, what it means, what's next, and what can we conclude about when doctors might have known it.
So it would have been known a while ago.
That is his contention. He said, another thing that was interesting, Chris, is he said, you know, typically the recommendations is between about 45 and 70 for men, you would do that PSA test on an annual basis. Now, Joe Biden is obviously outside of that window. He would have been 81 in 2024, but he did, my doctor friend, his name is Bart Radulinsky, he said, that's with a normal 81-year-old, but this is the President of the United States. So I do think there is at least a question of, was he given a PSA test in 2024? And if not, why not? And if he was, what did it show, or did we? Why were the results not released? I think that's a fair question. Again, we're talking about the health of the most powerful person in the world, in my opinion, a President of the United States. And by the way, I will note, Donald Trump has been less transparent than Joe Biden and the least transparent president in the modern era vis-a-vis his own medical records, medical history, and health. So this is not a partisan statement about Joe Biden. I would say the same thing about Donald Trump. We just don't know all that much about these guys and their sort of well-being.
Chris, I know more will come out about that story, I guess, in his health and where he was, and we'll follow that. But I do want to ask you about a call that is it going on now that President Trump is calling Russia's Vladimir Putin to discuss the war in Ukraine?
Yeah, so, Amy, it was scheduled. That call was scheduled. Now, I've not got a readout of whether it went on schedule, but I will tell you it was scheduled for 10 a.m. Eastern this morning. So I would assume if it was on time, it has already happened. And Donald Trump was then scheduled to call the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, after getting off the phone with Vladimir Putin. We do not have a readout right now of either of those conversations. Did they happen, and what was the nature, what was discussed? But I do think that's, I mean, look, Donald Trump wants to make a deal here. He wants to find a way to peace. He wants to be seen as the primary broker of it. You know, for a while, it looked like he was going to kind of take Russia's side on things. Then Putin obviously upped some of the attacks into Ukraine. That turned Trump against him a bit. I don't know if this is a reset. I don't know if this is a final negotiation. That would surprise me if it was. But he clearly is heavily invested in trying to make this happen.
Meanwhile, this big, beautiful bill that the House is trying to get through, or at least Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, is trying to get through, it's facing a lot of obstacles because there's a lot in it people don't like. So where do we stand on it and the likelihood it does get done by Thursday, if at all?
Well, let me emphasize that here in Washington, it is just before 12:15 p.m. Eastern time on Monday, because it could be at 12:25 p.m. Eastern time. This is different because this is a changeable situation, Chris. But what I would say is at very late last night, they passed a version of this bill through the House Budget Committee. This comes after on Friday they were unable to do so. What that basically does is clear the way for it to come to the House floor for a full vote. I don't think they have the votes currently. And a reminder to folks who don't pay super close attention to this, Republicans have a 3-seat majority in the House, which basically means, you know, if somebody is out of town and two people are sick, they don't have a majority anymore. So this was always going to be fraught just because of that majority. Anytime you're trying to do a big bill with lots of spending, and this bill has lots of spending in it, it's always going to be questionable. Mike Johnson, the Speaker, has said he wants to get this done by the end of the week. I just having spent a long time in Washington, I'm going to guess that timeline gets pushed. I mean, look, they'll do it as soon as they have the votes. I'm not sure they're going to have the votes by the end of the week. I think Donald Trump is going to have to weigh in here, particularly with conservatives who are worried about the amount of spending not being balanced out by an equivalent amount of cuts in the bill. I think Trump's going to have to get involved to kind of sway them. And I will point out to people, even if this does pass the House, it will go to the Senate, which is not as conservative as the House, although it is Republican-controlled, and Republicans in the Senate will make changes, and then it will have to go back to the House for approval. So we are not at the end. This would be step one of a at least three-step process here. My view, generally speaking, is they will get something done. I don't know when by, but they will get something done, mostly out of political necessity, because this is the only big thing that Congress is going to do between now and the November 2026 midterms. And if Republicans do nothing while in control of the House, Senate, and the White House, that sends a bad message that they're not going to send. So they'll do something. I don't know if it will be politically advantageous for them. I'm even more skeptical it will be economically advantageous for the American economy, but they'll do something. I just don't know exactly when.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because there's a lot of concern about what'll happen to Medicaid and, you know, benefits like food stamps and, you know, stuff that helps lower income people. And there's a lot of concern about whether or not that stuff gets ripped up or, you know, damaged in some way. And our own Senator Hawley just wrote an op-ed about a week and a half ago for the New York Times, warning them not to cut Medicaid. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens if it gets to the Senate, Chris.
Well, and, you know, Chris, the issue to hear, right, is there. One of the things when we talk about cutting spending by the federal government, like if you take the entitlement program, so that's Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security, and you add the Defense Department budget, which is roughly $1 trillion, that's between 80 and 85% of the overall federal spending. Donald Trump has insisted he is walling that off, right? He publicly, he has said, we're not going to cut entitlement programs, including Medicaid, he has said, and we're not going to touch the defense budget. Well, when you do that, you really narrow the scope of programs you can cut to get meaningful savings to counteract the spending that will be in place if he extends the tax cut, which I think that they put in place in 2017, which I think they will do, right? So there are only so many places to look. I know in the House bill there are cuts to Medicaid. Donald Trump has said he opposes those. You know, does he stick to that? Does he hedge somehow? You know, I think there are going to be a lot of popular programs, not just programs popular with Democrats, just overall popular programs that are going to be on the cutting room floor here as they try to solve for where can we find enough cuts to offset all the spending. And that's when I say the political advantage or disadvantage here to me is very much up in the air.
Chris Saliza, the author of the daily newsletter, So What, is an independent news creator. You can see him on YouTube, Newsphere, Substack, News Nation. Thanks, Chris. Great to talk to you as always, and we will do it again next Monday.
Thank you, guys. And please know that we are thinking of St. Louis as you guys recover. You are on our mind and in our prayers.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Take care.
That is Chris Saliza joining us.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. That it's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like,
yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.